Well, good morning, everyone. It's nice to see you all today. My name's Justin Walters, and I work with Campus Ambassadors at Western Oregon University. And our goal is to reach students with the gospel so that they might know Christ, and then to teach them how they can go and share their faith with those around them. Statistically, about 75% of students who grow up in the faith walk away from the faith after high school. I often ask people, look around the room, can you imagine if 75% of people in the room were just gone? Or if another way to think about it is, imagine that, that 1 million students go to college. That would be 750,000 of them just walking away from the faith after high school. So we see this as a very urgent mission to share the gospel with people. Many of them have grown up in the faith, but they don't know Jesus yet. And so that's just a little bit about what I do. But today what I actually want to focus on, and by the way, this is a picture of me and my wife Emily and our son Jason. This here is a picture of a retreat that we did. I think that was back in the winter. We had about 80 students show up. So that's just a little bit about what I do. But today I really want to focus on this passage. This is Matthew 28, 16 through 20. And this is, of course, the same passage that Randy read earlier today, but you're welcome to either follow along on the screen, or if you want, you can grab out a Bible and follow along with me. Matthew 28, 16 through 20. Then the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. When they saw him, they worshipped him, but some doubted. Then Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age." Isn't it interesting? The first thing that really stands out to me in this passage is, "but some doubted." Isn't it interesting? The very same people who followed Jesus for his entire ministry career, right? They saw him feed 5,000 people with all they had were some loaves of bread and a couple fish. They saw him feed an entire crowd of 5,000 people. They saw him heal sick people. They saw him raise Lazarus from the dead. They even heard him prophesy his own death and resurrection. And yet, here they are. He's right there in front of them, talking to them. Yet some of them doubted. Isn't that so interesting? Isn't that just so human? Don't we often doubt God? Even though we can look back on our life and just think of all the amazing things that God has done. I can look back on my life and think about times that God has literally saved me from death. I can think about times that God has provided in ways that seemed impossible. And yet I still doubt. And I suspect that many of you do at times. So that's the first thing that stands out to me, is that even those who were closest to Jesus throughout his ministry career, even some of them doubted. That's very interesting to me. But what's even more interesting to me is that Jesus didn't condemn them for their lack of faith. He didn't say, "Okay, yeah, those of you who actually believe me, those of you who believe that this is really me standing right here in front of you talking to you, why don't you go and make disciples of all nations while the rest of you just stay?" He didn't do that. He didn't make second-class Christians out of those who doubted. He called on all of his disciples. He said, "All of you, whether you are strong in faith, whether you're weak in faith, whether you have doubts, I want you to go and make disciples of all nations." I want you to imagine standing there with Jesus right there before you, and you've seen him right throughout his entire ministry career, you've seen all the stuff he's doing, and now he's saying, okay, it's time for me to go and be with the Father. Now it's time for you to do what you've been watching me do for the past several years. Can you imagine how intimidating, yet probably exciting in some ways, that would be? That is what's happening here. And you know, when I look back on my own testimony, I think about, you know, I've been doing campus ministry for 8 years now, and I look back on when I was still just a young guy, just out of college. I had gotten my bachelor's degree in psychology, and I thought, I don't know, I'm probably going to go be a counselor or something. You know, I look back on where I was at the time, and I just kind of thought, you know, I'm just volunteering a little bit with this young adult group. You know, and I remember when they asked me, Justin, would you consider coming on staff with Campus Ambassadors? Would you consider working with us, making vocational ministry your career? My first thought was, that sounds like a terrible idea. I thought, you want me? You want me to be in vocational ministry? I just remember thinking, man, I don't have my own life together. You want me to go and help other people hear the gospel and work through all these challenges, and you want me to go and raise support? Like, I'm the most quiet guy. I just remember thinking, no way, that sounds like a terrible idea, but I couldn't get the idea out of my mind, and eventually I thought, is God calling me to actually do this? You know, and when I look at the Bible, I don't see stories of extraordinary people doing amazing things. Other than the Apostle Paul, I mean, he's pretty extraordinary. But honestly, though, when I look at the Bible, I really see stories of ordinary, unfit people who don't feel ready to go and serve God's kingdom. Yet God works through them to do more than they could ever have thought possible. You know, when I look at the Apostle Peter, for example, and how up and down he was, how almost manic at times, right? You know, he goes from Jesus, you are Lord, and sudden, you know, to Jesus telling him, get behind me, Satan, right? I mean, here's a very unstable guy. And, you know, he goes from Jesus, I will never, ever deny you, to denying Jesus 3 times before the rooster crows. You know, and yet this is the guy who Jesus says, you know, Peter, on this rock I will build my church. You know, and of course we don't believe he's only talking about Peter, right? But Jesus is making a point here of, it's not the most crazy, most educated, most wild, totally fit for ministry in our eyes people that God calls to do ministry. He's calling all of us. He's calling every single one of us. But, you know, somewhere along the way, you know, maybe it's because of fear and doubt. We look at our own failures and we just think, no, God couldn't use me. You know, we might look and go, I've had so many awkward conversations with my neighbors or my friends. How will I ever share the gospel with them? You know, we might think, oh, I work in a workplace where I can't really share my faith openly with people. How am I supposed to make an impact on people's lives? You know, these are the things that we tell ourselves. It's the things that I've told myself. And somewhere along the way, as these fears and doubts start to creep in, you know, many of us, we started thinking that ministry was something that we pay other people to do. You know, it's a, yeah, we'll support the pastor, we'll support the missionaries. But you know, actually the Great Commission is for all of us, where we are. It's for where we are, what our context is. It doesn't matter if you're overseas, if you're here locally, if you're working, if you're retired. The Great Commission, it's for all of us. And you know, I find that we often kind of view the disciple-making process through two extremes, right? Some of us can say, I am personally called to go and make disciples of all nations, right? And this could even lead to thinking like, would I be sinning if I don't personally go into overseas missions? I remember when I was younger, I was at a church service where I walked away going, oh man, you know, I'm feeling all this guilt. Do I need to personally go into overseas missions? Like, am I not measuring up as a Christian if I don't do that, right? And so that's kind of one extreme way of thinking that we could take from this, is that I personally am called to go and make disciples of all nations. Because in fact, not even the apostles made disciples of all nations. They went to many different nations. But many of us are also just called to stay here and make disciples where we are at. You know, the other extreme thinking that I often see is we can say, well, you know, the calling to discipleship, that's directed at the broader church, right? That's not just and go and make disciples of all nations. That's church go and do it. So, yeah, so I'm good. I can just show up to church on Sunday and maybe I can help out here and there and tithe some money. And yeah, you know, I'm good to go, right? Like that's maybe the opposite extreme way of approaching this. In reality, the truth is somewhere in the middle. Because no, Jesus is not just talking to a single person. He's not saying, Justin, go and make disciples of all nations. He's saying, church, go and make disciples of all nations. But he also doesn't tell anyone, but you know, Justin, if you feel awkward about it, like if you feel unfit, if you think, you know, why would I choose you? Well, that's okay. You can just stay home and just watch TV, and you know, I'll get someone. Jesus, he's not saying that either. He's not giving us this excuse to just kind of go, yeah, I'm not going to do that. He's calling all of us to make disciples, but that doesn't mean that all of us are called to be overseas missionaries. That doesn't mean that all of us are called to focus on any given ministry, right? Not all of you here are called to do children's ministry or homeless ministry, but all of you are called to do some kind of ministry and to be part of that process of making disciples of all nations. You know, so if you're called to minister overseas, right, then you have a very different context. You're trying to reach people in a different culture. You're probably trying to help plant some churches. You're very focused on evangelism. Often you might be focused on reaching a large number of unreached people. If you're here, maybe you say you work in the public school system. You may not be able to share the gospel openly with students, although sometimes they might ask you some questions that you can answer, but you could absolutely focus on being a good character example. You could focus on witnessing to your coworkers. Maybe you're a banker. You know, you can focus on showing through your character that each of your customers are not just another face. They're not just another series of numbers in your system. They're all an important person sitting right in front of you. And you can, in most contexts, right, you can still focus on who can I share the gospel with in this context. Maybe you're retired and you're thinking, yeah, what about my neighbors? You know, do they know Jesus? So these are just all some different ways that we could approach it. And I often ask students who are in our ministry, right? Because sometimes they look at me and they go, yeah, you know, Justin, your job is to do ministry, so I don't have to do it. And so I'll often ask students, you know, how many people are in most of your classes? And they'll usually go, oh, I don't know, maybe 20 or 30, you know? And I'll ask them, okay, so how many of those people do you think actually know Jesus? And they'll go, I don't know, maybe two or three, you know? And I'll tell them, what if you're one of the only true Christians in your classroom? You know, that is a really big mission field, isn't it? If you are one of the only Christians in a room full of 30 people, man, that's really a big missions field. So I just want to challenge all of us, myself included, to expand our understanding of missions and evangelism. It's not just going overseas or going to do a specific task. It's all of us have people in our lives, whether we're actively pursuing them or not, we have people in our lives who don't know Jesus. And so what can we do to be a witness to those people? You know, and there's another verse that comes to mind. This is from Jude chapter 1, verse 22 through 23. Be merciful to those who doubt. Save others by snatching them from the fire. To others show mercy mixed with fear, hating even the clothing stained by corrupted flesh. So this might sound a little bit intense. I don't mean it to sound that intense, but I want you to imagine for a moment that you're sitting in a coffee shop full of, you know, 30 people. Okay, it's a busy day at the coffee shop. And suddenly you become aware that everybody other than yourself is on fire. Everybody around you is on fire, and they don't realize that they're on fire. I don't know why. Maybe their nervous system just isn't working. I don't know. But for some reason, everyone around you is on fire. They don't realize it. You're the only one who isn't. What are you going to do in that situation? You know, would you just sit around going, oh, yeah. Well, hopefully someone puts them out. I don't know, you know. Or would you grab water and go, oh my goodness, everybody, you know, you're tossing it on everyone going, you guys, do you not realize, do you not see that you're on fire? I mean, now I realize that the process of evangelism is not literally the same thing as putting out someone who's on fire, because no, you can't just grab some holy water and go and toss it on somebody and now they're saved. That's not how this works. I understand that, but I still think that we really should have that level of urgency, shouldn't we? I mean, if we really believe what we believe, you know, if we really believe that Jesus is Lord and that he's the only way to God, that he's the only way to eternal life, why wouldn't we have that level of urgency? And so, again, though, we could take this to an extreme, right? Because I'm not saying that you should go and hold up a sign on the corner saying, turn or burn. You know, that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying even that the first conversation you have with a non-believer should always immediately go to Jesus. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe your first conversation with them is just getting to know them and being a good friend and helping them to see that they can actually trust a Christian. And that's okay. Sometimes that's often for me, a lot of the time when I first start meeting with students, I'll just get to know them. I'll ask them questions. Oftentimes we will go through the Bible right away. Sometimes we don't. But I just want them to see that I want them to know that I'm a Christian and that I'm somebody that they can trust. And as I'm getting to know them, I can start having these conversations with them. So I don't want you to confuse the urgency for thinking that you literally should go and be in your face with everybody. But I do want us to think, man, this really is an urgent call. This is an urgent rescue mission that Christ has put us on. We really are meant to see that life is very short. None of us know when our last day will be. And we really should be thinking about how can we go and reach people. And so I think that that's what Jude is asking of us when he says save others by snatching them from the fire. So we say, God, I want to be faithful to this. You're right, I want to see this calling as urgent. I want to go and reach people. I want to share the gospel. I don't want to just sit and wait for someone else to do it. But how do I know if I'm being successful? You know, what if I spend years and years reaching out to the same person, praying for them, and I just don't see any fruit, you know? Or what if I'm spending all sorts of time trying to get to know my neighbors and they're all just ignoring me or rejecting me, or, you know, or maybe I'm having conversations with people that just aren't going anywhere, right? How can I know if I'm being successful at what you're calling me to do? You know, we often look to people like Billy Graham, right, who've saved millions of people, you know, and we think, is that success? Do I have to lead a large number of people to Jesus in order to be successful? And I think that we're often thinking about this the wrong way. You know, because we think, oh, if I see lots of numbers, then that must mean I'm successful. If I see very few numbers, then that must mean I'm unsuccessful. But what we should really be asking ourselves is, am I being faithful to the work that God has placed in front of me? Maybe God's not saying, Justin, I want you to go and save 100,000 people. Maybe that's not what God's calling me to do. Maybe he wants me to, you know, I mean, even as I look back on this school year, I go, we've had 5 students come to know Christ. That's awesome, you know, that's not 5,000, right? But that's great, you know, and I look back and go, man, that's 5 people who didn't know Jesus. And I'm really happy that I get to be part of a ministry where that's been some of the results. But what if nobody came directly to faith in a year? You know, it's still, am I being faithful to what God's putting in front of me? Am I asking God, who do you want me to reach out to? You know, what do you want my ministry to look like? And you know, there's a student story actually who comes to my mind. You know, it's because it's interesting. I told you I've been in ministry for about 8 years, and for some of those years I was not at Western. I was actually for a while I was over at Chemeketa Community College over in Salem, and you know, I had some years there where I can look back and I can see what God was doing, but oftentimes it felt very unfruitful during that time period, and yet I was trying very, very hard, you know, and I just think, but was I being faithful to what God put in front of me? I believe that I was, and yet now, just this school year, you know, we meet this student, his name is Christian, and here I'm actually going to show you a picture of him. That's me baptizing him. Christian, when he came into our group, he had kind of a crazy story. You know, he was involved with the partying lifestyle. He was an athlete in high school, and he was involved in some weird Eastern mysticism kind of stuff as well. And, you know, but he almost drowned last summer. He came really close to facing death, and God just got his attention through that. And so he came into our group, and somehow he just already knew that the Bible was true. I don't know how he knew that. It must have been God's work, you know, but he already knew the Bible was true, but it was like he had the map, but he hadn't yet found the destination. You know, he was so close, but when you would ask him, you know, well, who is Jesus? What is the gospel message? He couldn't really articulate it. It's like he was so close. And so I remember spending a lot of time meeting with him, and I would take him through passages like John chapter 3, just helping him understand who Jesus is and what it means to be born again. And, you know, I really wasn't doing anything flashy. I wasn't trying super hard or holding up any certain signs or doing anything really cool. I really was just saying, okay, I think God has put Christian in front of me, and so if he's willing to meet, then I'm going to meet with him. And so we did. And several weeks into meeting, he just became very clear on the Christian faith. He could articulate it. And you could just tell how on fire for Christ he was and still is. And in fact, now, just any time he's having a conversation with his non-believing friends, it's like he's just immediately, he's like, how can I share the gospel with them? It's so cool. And I got to baptize him. That was the end of fall term. You know, but again, I look at that and go, I didn't do anything amazing or special. That was really just God. God had done this amazing, special work in Christian's life. I just said, God, I want to be faithful to you. What do you want me to do? And I did it. And God, it really, the results belong to God. So as we focus on being faithful to Christ, we begin to see disciple making it's not just a process of holding up signs or knocking on doors. You could do that. You could. You know, you could hold up some signs to get people's attention, and maybe that starts some conversations. You could knock on lots of people's doors and just see who will talk to you. That's not the only way to do it. I mean, you could do that if you wanted to, but what we start to realize is it's actually just a process of inviting our friends and neighbors to personally experience the power of Jesus. We're not trying to sell people something. We're just trying to say, hey, God's doing this amazing thing in my life. Can I tell you about it? And we allow the results to God. We allow God to do with that what he will do with it. So as we share the gospel with those around us, we can invite them to be part of something bigger than ourselves, bigger than themselves. So as we're getting ready to close here, I really want to focus on the last sentence of this passage from Matthew, where Jesus says, "And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age." You know, I've had some people say to me over the years, "I could never do what you're doing." And I understand that sentiment because I used to think the same thing. I would look at people in vocational ministry and just think, "Oh my goodness, I could never do what they're doing." I remember I heard a guy presenting about how he and his wife were missionaries in Indonesia to cannibal tribes, and I just remember thinking, "Oh man, I could never do that," right? And you know, the thing is, as I said, most of us, we're not called to vocational ministry, but we are called to reach out to those around us. Whether that means you're getting to know a coworker who's just struggling to fit in, and you're thinking, "Man, I could be a friend to this person. You know, I could point them to Jesus." Maybe you're reaching out to your neighbors. Maybe you're just going and buying a meal for a homeless person and sharing Christ's love with them. It really doesn't matter what we think we're capable of, because at the end of the day, if God has called you to do something for his kingdom, then he will empower you to do it. That's exactly what Jesus is saying here. "And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age." That is true both in life, but he's specifically contextualizing that to the Great Commission, right? He's not just saying, "Yeah, as you're sitting there on the couch watching TV, I'm with you always." I believe that he is, but what he's saying is that as you go out and as you make disciples, I am with you always to the end of the age. He's saying, "I will be right there with you, even if you think it's impossible, even if you think I will never be able to do that, I'll never be able to lead someone to Christ." He is with us, and it is God himself who is empowering us. So I want to just challenge you guys to think about who's someone in your life that needs to know Jesus. How can you be praying for them? And what are some steps that you might take with them to point them to faith? Could just be inviting them over for a meal to get to know them more, helping them to trust a Christian. Maybe it's asking a close friend about some of their beliefs, asking some deeper personal questions, right? Whatever step you take, every step, even small steps matter. And so I want to encourage you guys, if you're feeling a conviction as I'm sharing this, that you really want to reach more people for Jesus, these are just two books that you might check out that I've found really helpful. One of them is called I Once Was Lost. Yeah, that's by Don Everetts and Doug Shop. And that is a really helpful tool. It's actually based on real-world research. They researched a bunch of people who came to faith and what the process was like for them. So that book is really great. And then there's Evangelism Made Slightly Less Difficult by Nick Pollard. That's another really solid one where he's talking about how can we direct our conversations in a way that really point people to Jesus. What are the kinds of questions that we might ask in order to get people to faith? So I just want to encourage you guys to check out those books if you're looking for a really good tool that you can use. I also just want to say if you're interested in learning more about my ministry work with Campus Ambassadors over at Western Oregon University, you know, well, here is my contact info, but I will be at a table out there in the foyer right after the service is over. So you're welcome to come and say hi to me. Hopefully my wife and son will be able to join me. I think they've been up in the nursery for most of today. But yeah, you're welcome to come and say hi. And I have a newsletter that I send out regularly just sharing, here's some of the stuff that's going on in students' lives. Here's some ways you can be praying for people. So if you'd be interested in just learning more about my ministry and keeping in the loop with prayer requests and that sort of thing, then come say hi to me and feel free to grab a newsletter and sign up for that. So I'm just going to close this in prayer. Lord, thank you so much for your love for us. Thank you for the amazing calling that you've given us to go and make disciples of all nations. I know that many of us, myself included, often don't feel fit for that. We don't feel like that's something that we are capable of doing, but you've called us to do it, and you're going to see us through it. So I just pray that you would help us to see who the people in our life are that we can be a witness to. Let us not be driven by guilt or insecurity, but just help us to just open-handedly ask you what you would like us to do today. Thank you, Lord, and in Jesus' name I pray.